Have you ever wondered what really goes on behind the scenes of a paranormal TV show? What moment still really gives me the chills? Or maybe you just want to know what song I blast before walking into a haunted asylum at midnight. Tonight, it's your turn to ask the questions. I've sifted through my mailbag of the macabre, and I've read your questions, selected my favorite pieces from that, and I'm going to do my very best to answer them all tonight. From ghost hunts and UFO encounters to my favorite scary flicks and the mysteries that keep me up at night, this is the Paranormal 360, the listener Q&A special. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Let's get started. All right, first up, we're heading to Des Moines, Iowa, where Lindsay writes in and says, Dave, you've been in the paranormal field for decades. What was the one experience that made you say, okay, this is real? You know, that's a great question because I had paranormal experiences throughout my youth. But again, looking back at them through the lens of adulthood, I question many of those moments. Were they just plays of light and shadows in my room? What really happened? Did my grandmother's spirit actually come to visit me? Or was I just dreaming about my grandmother? Now, a lot of people would say that that dream is a visitation. But from the stories that my family has shared with me, I was very, very insistent on the fact that when I spent the night at my grandfather's house after my grandmother passed away, my grandmother would come visit me. And I would tell them about how I would talk to her and she would read me stories. My mom would try to convince me, well, honey, you were just dreaming about grandma. She's in heaven, remember? And I said, I know, and she misses us. And I would launch into these tales about what my grandmother was saying and doing. So I have no recollection of that personally, but I was able to give detailed information to my mom and to my aunt that I had no way of knowing at 3 years old. So I really think that was the door that opened this entire interest and fascination with the paranormal for me, as I kept hearing that story growing up. Now, I lived in a haunted house in Medina, Illinois, my father's house, my father who passed away just recently on the 4th of July. I'm now living in that house part-time, and it is a trip to be back here because it's still haunted. Even as an adult, I'm hearing things. Things walking around upstairs when I'm downstairs, seeing things banging around downstairs while I'm upstairs. It's been strange to be back. And I don't feel like it's the spirits of my parents that are here. I think it's the spirits that have always been in this house. But I would say one of the stories that really kind of gave me my first aha moment, I was probably 17, 18 years old, and growing up in the Chicagoland area, I went on the ghost tour here that was held by the legendary Richard Crow. Richard Crow was a man among men here in the Windy City. He loved the paranormal. He lived and breathed the paranormal. And he was my first real kind of indoctrination into that world because he allowed you to go on these 3-hour bus tours where he would take you to famous sites throughout Chicago, from the site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre to the Billy Goat grill and bar. That's where the Cubs, they believe, ended up with their curse because they weren't allowed to bring the Billy Goat out on the field, and they got cursed because of that. That's what kept them from winning all of those years. Just strange things like that. But the stories were fascinating. One of the stories took us to Hull House, which is downtown on Circle Campus in Chicago. And this beautiful old house, and I was there with one of my oldest and best friends, Rick Schwartz. And we were walking around. He was telling us about the ghost stories regarding this house, the legend of the demon baby that had been brought there and dropped off, which they believe was kind of the germination of the idea for Rosemary's Baby, the book and movie. The concept was that this house was run by nuns and that somebody had come and dropped off this malformed baby that had cloven hooves and would jump up and run around. Very strange story, but he said people still see things inside this house, which was now really just kind of a little museum in the middle of this campus. And back in the day, we didn't have cell phones. I know. It's hard to believe that maybe there was a time before cell phones. So we had these little Instamatic cameras. Mine was a little 110 Kodak. And I took it with me on this trip. I was taking pictures of all these haunted spots. And at one point, I put it up against the window to take a picture inside the whole house because it was really beautifully kept and looked like a 1920s home inside. I took a couple of pictures, sent the film in to be developed, and got together with my friend Rick a couple weeks later. Because back in the day, you used to have to take your film from inside your camera to a place that would develop your film for you and then give them back to you. And we sat down and started going through it. And I looked at one and I said, oh, this one's ruined. There's like a smudge on it. And when I threw it across the table at him, it spun around and stopped. And I remember the look on Rick's face. And he said, Dave, that's not a smudge. That's a hand. I said, what? He goes, man, that's a hand reaching towards the window. And I thought he was trying to get under my skin. We were like brothers. We were always trying to scare each other growing up and telling weird stories. We used to practice radio shows in the garage with our old tape recorder, doing old haunted stories of the Hardy Boys and so on. So I was used to that kind of goofiness from Rick. But then he brought the picture over and showed it to me. Sure enough, when I first looked at it, it just looked like this amorphous kind of blob. But when you actually turned it to the angle that it landed in front of him, you could see it was clearly a hand reaching towards the window. I could even see the fingernails. And at first I thought, well, maybe, just maybe, it's my hand reflected in the window. However, there's no distortion. There's nothing blocking part of my hand like the camera would have done. And knowing how I held the camera and the position it was in, it would have made no sense. This hand was inside the building reaching towards the window at us. It was really chilling. And that, I would think, is probably one of the first aha moments that, holy Christmas, there's something more to this. This isn't just imagination. This isn't just hallucination. I had a ghost photograph. I absolutely loved it. I wish I still had it. I lost it in time somewhere. And I'm hoping that as I keep going through my parents' home, I might uncover an old box of photos and find it in there. But as of yet, I have not. Thank you very much for that question. I hope that gives you a little bit of insight into my world. Next is from Mark from Phoenix, Arizona. He wants to know, do you still get scared on investigations, or has curiosity taken over? That's a really good question. This sounds so BS when you hear people talk about it. I'm not afraid. I'm a paranormal investigator. I go in looking for these things. But there's truth to that. I go to some of the most haunted locations on the planet, investigating, going and looking at claims that already exist. I've kind of come in prepped, ready for that. Now, when I go in, I try not to go in a place of fear, because I feel that that can influence the way the investigation will go. And little things might set me off that normally wouldn't. So I really try to just go in with empathy and love and compassion for these spirits. And I want to know why they're still there. And if they want to communicate with me, is there anything I can do to help them? And fear has been replaced with curiosity. That's a great way to put it. So I've really tried to replace that fear with curiosity. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not fallible. I still get jump scared from time to time when something bangs or drops, or I hear a voice out loud in the same room with me, like what happened on the new TV series I'm on, Paranormal Mysteries, which is streaming now on Stream Beacon TV. Yes, it is a new streaming service. It is your new home for horror, paranormal, and true crime. Go check out Paranormal Mysteries on Stream Beacon TV. So I would say, yes, my fear has been replaced with curiosity. We've got more questions, more answers coming up right after this. All right, welcome back to the program. This is your home for all things strange and supernatural. You can tune in to the Paranormal 360, a well-rounded look at all things strange and anomalous. I'm your host on this journey, Dave Schrader. I have now been actively pursuing the paranormal for 20 years straight. This January 1st, 2026, will mark my 20th anniversary as a professional broadcaster talking about the paranormal. So it's been a very exciting time in my life. It's been really wonderful to see the things that I've always been fascinated with, married with my favorite thing, which is doing radio. I grew up wanting to do radio so bad. And the fact that I'm able to do this and have been able to do this for 20 years, and it's afforded me the opportunity to appear on some TV shows, to write books, to be out and about meeting and greeting people around the world and investigating places like Romania and Australia, Germany, Prague, France, England, I know I'm leaving some out, Scotland, Ireland. It's really been remarkable, a fantastic journey. And I'm so thankful. And I thank all of you that have been along with me on this journey for many years. And for those of you that have just found us, welcome to the family, my darklings. And thank you for being here tonight. I'm doing things a little differently. Instead of a guest answering your questions, I've got a lot of them that have come in, and you can always email me more questions, dave@paranormal60.com. That's dave@paranormal60.com, which is my email and the name of my show. You can find Mondays and Wednesdays live on YouTube. Just go look up Paranormal 60. Or if you'd like, you can subscribe to the audio only version of Paranormal 60. And that's wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Just go look Paranormal 60. Not only will you find my show, but I've got a whole little network there of some really fascinating paranormal shows and a true crime program hosted by Winnie Schrader, my wife. So you can go check all that out. Again, subscribe Paranormal 60 wherever you listen to podcasts. And for those of you that are just tuning in, you can also listen to this show in podcast form and go back and hear every episode over the last year that we have recorded. You can find that by looking up Paranormal 360, and you'll be able to do that. Let's get back to your questions as we dive into the mailbag of the macabre. All right, Naomi out in Portland wants to know, was there ever a case so dark you decided to walk away? You know, there were a few cases when we were filming the Holzer Files, and I think one case on Ghosts of Devil's Perch. Those were two TV shows that aired on Travel Channel and Discovery Networks, Discovery Plus streaming service. And if you have HBO Max, you can watch them there. The Holzer Files, H-O-L-Z-E-R. We reopened the case files of America's preeminent paranormal investigator, Dr. Hans Holzer, and got a chance to go back in and re-examine some of the cases that he made legendary. And we had a great time doing that. And then The Ghosts of Devil's Perch was a different series. Cindy Kaza, the medium, and I from Holzer Files jumped over to do this show where we were called to Butte, Montana by the mayor and the chief of police asking for help because of the strange uptick in unusual supernatural attention that was taking place in their town. These are things that the police could not put their hands on, right? You can't go in when somebody calls and says there's footsteps in my house, something's banging around, and the police get there and there's nothing out of place. There's no one in the house. What do you do? And because this town, Butte, Montana, was built on blood, sweat, and tears, and so many tragic lives were lost throughout those years of it being a gambling, prostitution, and mining, those three things created quite a catalyst for cataclysm, and a lot of negative things took place in that town. So it's no wonder it's haunted. Underneath Butte is hundreds of miles of caverns and tunnels and mining tunnels. And there are bodies that still lie underneath this town that have been lost and forgotten to time. So I'm not surprised by the type of activity, but there were a few instances when we were investigating cases and, you know, we always keep Cindy Kaza, the medium, out of the loop. We don't want her to know what's going on. We don't want to affect what she's able to pick up on. So we don't usually tell her about what's going on at these cases. And there were a few where they told us that these things seem to really attack women or attack psychics and mediums. And that got me worried. And there were times that I was worried for Cindy, worried for her safety. And I would address that with her. I wouldn't tell her specifically what was happening or what was going on, but I would tell her that I thought she might be in danger. And on many instances, she put me straight. She just said, Dave, this is my life. This is what I do. I know how to protect myself. I know how to go in there, and I'm not easily frightened. And she was brilliant. She was great at what she does. And she would go in and just face these things head on. So there were a few cases like that, but every time I brought it up to Cindy, she would dismiss my fears and go headlong in. And she was fearless. She still is fearless. I have not really gone into a case that I would not want to go back into, except for a few places that I felt just didn't live up to the hype. I didn't feel there was enough paranormal activity there, even after visiting two or three times. That would be the only reason I would avoid some of those places. Tyler from Charleston writes, what's the most convincing piece of afterlife evidence you've personally witnessed? That's a great question. I've really been lucky. I've been able to hear DVP, which is direct voice phenomena, being in a place and hearing voices out loud, not just me, but with groups of people. I've caught recordings, EVP, electronic voice phenomena. I've seen shadowy figures. And I guess that would be one that really kind of blew me away was Waverly Hill Sanitarium in Louisville, Kentucky. It was a former tuberculosis clinic that eventually was turned into like a hospice center and an old folks home. So tens of thousands of people died in that building through the course of its history. And I heard about all of these shadowy figures and strange things. And I brought a big investigative group and event to Waverly Hills, along with some of my paranormal celebrity friends from TV shows like Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, Dead Famous, Paranormal Kids, all of those different programs. And we would go in and meet with our fans and followers and do talks and talk about our experiences and do Q&As like this. And then we'd spend the night investigating with the fans. And I remember walking with Tina Mattingly, one of the owners, and we had set everybody off and we were heading back down to the headquarters area. And we're walking through this long, dark corridor and I had my flashlight on and she said, turn off your flashlight, Schrader. We're going to look for shadow people. Now, I am a skeptical believer, which I know sounds like a conundrum and a bit of a problem for people out there, but I've had experiences, I've seen and witnessed things, but I still question everything, even my own experiences. And to tell me that there's shadow people and things moving around, okay. You know, I thought it was fun for the fans and, you know, these stories are great for them to buy into, but I turned off my flashlight and nodded and said, okay, Tina, and we took about 12 more steps and she goes, shh, look, look, look. She stopped me with her hand on my chest. And she goes, look down there at the door frame. And sure enough, it looked like something like a head and shoulders bobbing back and forth, like it was looking out from the door frame. And I will admit at first it caught me off guard, but then I remembered there's no windows on that side of the building at this time. This was before they put all the renovations into it. It was a full moon because I remember how excited everybody was to investigate on the night of a full moon because we all know things are weirder on those nights. And I could hear wind blowing and I thought, oh, you know what? That's like a branch of a tree. That's a shadow bobbing back and forth. And as I looked at it, the more I heard the wind and it was bobbing in that motion, the rhythmic motion of the wind. So I kind of rolled my eyes and I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool, Tina. And as I turned and took a step, walking directly at me was a fully formed dark black shadow figure. It walked through me. Our shoulders passed through one another. And I wish I had some profound experience like tingles throughout my body or ice cold, or I could feel his breath on my neck. Nothing happened. But I did turn around. And I said, what was that? And she said, well, Dave, you just met Big Black, our resident shadow person. We'll be back with more questions and answers right after this. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360. And if you're brand new to the show, welcome to the program. We are here every Sunday night exploring the strange and supernatural, from ghosts and aliens to monsters, myths, and legends. My name is Dave Schrader, and I am your host on this journey. And tonight, I've opened up the mailbag looking at different emails I've gotten from people around the world and kind of broken them into different factions. So I'm trying to answer as many as I can for this 2-hour span and give you some insights into why I do what I do, what my thoughts are on many different things. So let's continue. And thank you to Tyler from Charleston and Naomi from Portland for those last two questions. Now we're going to go up to Winnipeg, where James wants to know, has your view of ghosts changed since your Darkness Radio days to now with the Paranormal Mysteries TV show? Yes, considerably. Like many of you, I bought into the Hollywood hype that a ghost is nothing more than a displaced element of who we were, this etheric form that pops out of our physical form upon death. But I think that that's too basic. We as humans want to place things into compartments and make sense of them. And it's not always that easy. We can't just summarily dismiss so many of what we're looking at and so many things and try to compartmentalize them, because I think there's so many different elements to what ghosts are. Echoes of the past, time slip phenomena, just strange things like that. And I do believe that there are these disincarnate beings that are walking amongst us, but I don't know. Are they alien in nature trying to mimic us? Are they older than the humans themselves? Are they elemental beings? I mean, when you look back at European culture and you look at the stories that have always existed, a lot of their paranormal has nothing to do with ghosts as we know them today. It has to do with wee people, the little people, and fairy folk, and fae, and things along those lines. That used to be a joke to me, and I would kind of roll my eyes about it until Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who was a very profound researcher and author in the paranormal field. We lost her about 5 or 6 years ago. She passed away, but she'd written, I think, 40 or 50 books on just about every element of the paranormal. And she asked me, why do you scoff at the concept of fairies? You'll buy into Bigfoot. You'll buy into aliens. You'll buy into angels and demons and ghosts. But the concept that maybe these little beings that have been seen for centuries are just something to be dismissed. I said, well, look, I mean, we know what fairies are. Look at what we see in movies and TV. And she pointed out, well, tell me, Dave, what is a fairy? I said, they're these delightful little sprites that sling little magic wands and are cute wearing little grass skirts and fly around. And she goes, well, that's what Disney wants you to believe. But they were actually pretty close to what fairies really are, Dave. They're kind of these troublemakers. And when you think about fairies, you think of these cute little pixie-like characters. However, you forget, Tinkerbell did try to get Peter Pan killed. She tried to kill Wendy herself. She turned the Lost Boys into Captain Hook. If you cross a fairy or disrupt their area, it can really upset them and can unleash all kinds of holy hell. So I took that at face value from what she told me and did not dismiss anymore. And as a matter of fact, when I went over to Ireland, I thought it was really interesting that kind of our host that was taking us around, our tour leader, kind of rolled her eyes when it came to the concept of ghosts and thought it was silly. Yet they believed in banshees and puka and changelings and, you know, creatures like that. And at one point we even stopped the bus that we could leave a token at the fairy bush in order to pass through the next area safely. And there's this huge fairy bush. They even have signs for it so that you can stop and leave a tribute. And people were leaving jewelry or pennies or candy, a soda, or a bottle of water, anything that could just placate the fae folk so that we could pass through. So my perspective on the paranormal has, I've tried to remain fluid and liquid, meaning that I'm not stoic. I'm not like the mighty oak that can't bend. I think that there's many different things we can learn and many different ways of examining the paranormal. So yes, my vision and belief on what ghosts are has changed radically. And I think there are many different levels of what hauntings can be. As a matter of fact, if you'd like to join me next weekend, we're going to be doing the paranormal investigation out at the Palmer House Hotel. I think I have 5 tickets still available for the entire weekend. Dalen Spratt from the Ghost Brothers will be there. Psychic medium Diette Renee, who is phenomenal, will be on hand. We're going to be investigating all weekend, and there'll be a gallery session with Diette Renee. There will be some ITC sessions. That's working with spirit boxes and other equipment to try to communicate with the other side with Dalen Spratt. We're going to go visit a haunted cemetery. We get to stay inside the haunted Palmer House Hotel, live there, breathe there, eat there, ghost hunt there. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can find more information at my website, darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. All right, let's see. You darklings, you really know where to start a little deep on this, right? Let's lighten it up just a little bit before we go into the next break. We'll pull back the curtain just a little bit. Crystal from Scranton, hometown of the Smurl Haunting, asks, out of all of your shows, The Holzer Files, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, Paranormal State, Ghost Adventures, what was your most terrifying on-camera moment? Oh, that's good. That's good. Terrifying? I guess, obviously, getting knocked on my butt at the Whaley House on the Holzer Files. I've watched all these shows like many of you, and I love them, but I've always been skeptical of people being scratched and pushed and bit and their hair pulled. You know, I don't doubt that they're moving amongst us. And once in a while, I've felt that cold breeze move past me and the hairs on my arm will stand up. So I've kind of believed in that. But when we were there investigating the Whaley House in San Diego, we were calling on this dark spirit of Juan Verdugo, who had, he was kind of a Mexican pioneer of his area. And he and his group decided that it was nonsense that that the white people had come in and taken over their area there in San Diego. So they wanted to go back and take it back for their people. And they were quickly grabbed and captured, and each one was killed. Juan Verdugo, as I recall, was forced to dig his own grave and then stand in front of it as five different men from town shot him to death, and he fell into that grave. One of those people being Mr. Whaley himself. The Whaley House is also built on the spot that was once the hanging area in the town. So he got it for I think he bought the property for $10 back in the day because it was considered tainted. Nobody wanted to live there. Nobody wanted to build a business there, let alone their own home. He did both. So a lot of tragedy befell his family. And at one point, his daughter, Violet Whaley, tried to take her own life. And luckily, they saved her the first time. The second time, they were not successful. And she died right there in the parlor. And while we were in there talking, we were doing an EVP session. And I asked Juan Verdugo, did he influence Violet Whaley to take her own life? When suddenly, what sounded like a gunshot went off in the house and surprised the three of us. And we played back the recording a few times, and then something hit me like a linebacker and pushed me into Shane. I went up in the air, hit Shane, and then fell to the floor. I didn't know what happened at first because I really thought it was so dark in there. One of the cameramen must have come around and tripped over the carpet and fallen into me, causing that moment to happen. When I turned around and there was nobody there, my brain broke. I could not make sense of what the experience was that I just had. So I would say that'd be the one that really left the most indelible mark on me. There were a few other moments that were pretty scary. Ghosts to Devil's Perch. When I did the episode where we were in the basement, we did that deal where like I was robbed of my vision and sight so that I could try to communicate and hear through the spirit box. That one terrified the hell out of me. We'll be back with more of your questions right after this. Crystal from Scranton, that was a great question. Thank you so much for asking. Now, Tony in Chicago is wondering, is there a behind-the-scenes story that never made it to air but still haunts you? Well, you know what? Let me tell you, when I filmed an episode with the Ghost Adventures crew, we went to this place called Stardust Ranch, and it was up in Arizona. Stardust Ranch, this guy's story was so crazy, and I'd had him on my old radio show, Darkness Radio. I had the owner on, and he was telling these bizarre stories. His property was like the Skinwalker Ranch. If you've heard of that TV show or heard the legend of Skinwalker Ranch, this place out in the Uinta Basin in and around Vernal, Utah, that has aliens, portals, cryptid creatures, demonic beasts, large giant wolf-like creatures, all kinds of really strange things that are seen on the property and are experienced. But this guy's property was kind of ringing all those bells. I had him on the radio show. I reached out to Zach, the host of Ghost Adventures afterwards. And I said, Zach, I know you keep looking for a place like Skinwalker Ranch. I may have found it for you. So this guy's story is insane. I'm going to be upfront with you. And I sent them the episode. And this guy talks about battling aliens with a samurai sword that he had on his wall. And that if he would decapitate them, they would simply vanish. And one of them, he ran through with the samurai sword and punched it into the wall and it vanished. But when he pulled the sword out, there was still a piece of meat. And that meat was taken by a scientist and taken in to be analyzed. And that scientist mysteriously died. And the piece of evidence, that piece of meat vanished as well without a clue. There's no idea where it went. So this was the story. I told him this could be the biggest bunch of garbage or it could be the scariest thing we've ever gone to see. So he said, well, why don't you put your money where your mouth is? Why don't you come out from behind the microphone and join us and investigate this place? So I was thrilled to join them and I went out there. And during part of the investigation, I was talking to Billy Tolley and I said, boy, I'd really love to see an alien craft, man. And he goes, would you go up? I said, yeah, in a minute, just to get the chance to see something off this world and from out of this world. And that was pretty cool to me to just be there. And I remember the night of the main investigation as we were standing there. Aaron Goodwin and I were standing outside of the RV and the rest of the crew was in the RV getting ready and suited up. And we heard something and both of us snapped our head to the sky and this light came zipping over us and stopped and then banked off at a crazy turn and took off back over the hills. this was not a drone. This was not anything like that. I mean, this craft was moving fast and silent and banked at crazy, degrees and took off and flew. And it was like out of sight in seconds. And Aaron and I lost our minds. We were like, oh my God, that's insane. And they all ducked out there to see it. And of course, nobody was running a camera because this is before we even began the investigation. So later on in the episode, Zach said, hey, Dave, Billy tells me you'd like to get abducted. And I'm like, well, I don't know that I want to get abducted, but I wouldn't mind going of my own volition. He goes, but you'd like to be abducted? I go, well, in a sense, yes, I guess I would like to be abducted. He goes, what if we put you up on that mountain over there by yourself where they see the UFO lights and the mothership that hovers over it? And I said, yeah, I'd love to go up there. So they put me up on that mountain by myself and they went all back down to the house. Just before they left, though, Zach went to hand me the walkie-talkie. He said, this walkie-talkie goes up to 10 miles. We'll be able to hear you if you need help. And I said, you know what? No. And I handed him back the walkie-talkie and I handed him my cell phone. I said, if they can come from another planet or from another dimension, they're going to know if I can call for help. And I don't want that. So I left them my phone and my walkie-talkie. And I'm not an avid outdoorsman, folks. I am not that guy. So it was really kind of chilling because there are wild animals up there too, mountain lions and all kinds of crazy stuff and rattlesnakes. And I'm not a fan of snakes either, but I really wanted to do this. So about 40, 50 yards away from me, they put a big night vision camera with a big night vision light aimed at me so that it could film me while I was out there experiencing what was going on. And I had a pair of field glasses, binoculars that filmed in night vision. And I did what I could to try to inspire some kind of communication and even prayed, asking for God to let these creatures or these beings be seen. And I caught it on film. Something came flying up and stopped and then boom, took off like a shot. And I caught it all on film. It's in the episode. But what was really creepy was being up there alone. I could hear something walking around and it wasn't like an animal padding. Like you can hear the, like the 4 feet kind of crunching in the leaves or dirt. This sounded like deliberate footsteps right in the area. I could clearly see, but could not, couldn't see anything physically walking around over there. It was very weird, very weird. And I think a little bit of that makes the episode, but you don't get the real benefit of just how freaked out I was being up on this mountain a couple miles away from everybody, all by myself doing this. But I'm really pleased that I did that. I'm so thankful that I got that opportunity. So I would say that would be kind of one of the biggest moments for me. Brianna from Sacramento says, how does investigating for television differ from your private cases? Is it harder to stay focused with camera rolling? That's a great question. I thought I would be unfocused, but you settle into it pretty quick because it's very scaled back. There's like one camera guy with me and I've got my microphone on and the sound guy's outside the house or away from us so that they're not interfering. It was good. I actually used my camera guy as another investigator because if I started to hear something, I would ask him, can you hear that? And he would nod and we would have these experiences together. So I would say the difference is when we go to a haunted spot for most of the TV shows, we're there because it's well known and it's got a history. Going in to private residences and other places, sometimes it's just giving some corroboration to the people that are having experiences to help them allay their fears that they're not crazy, or better yet, to give them some real insight as to what is going on. And I'll tell you one of my favorite crazy zany stories that took place right here in Minnesota. I'll do that after the top of the hour break. We'll come back and I'll discuss that story. I didn't even go out to do the investigation because I really felt that the phone call that I had with this woman put us on the right path and that it didn't need to go any further. And I got some great validation from her many years later. So we'll talk about that when we come back. I've got more emails from you and I'd love to hear from you as well. You can always email me dave@paranormal60. That's the number six, the number zero, dave@paranormal60. And davidparanormal60.com. I'll answer your questions on a future episode right here on the Paranormal 360.